nobility. Mention your mother, if you will, who bravely relinquished her sons to the future. The Almighty has not given us the power of foresight, but I cannot help but think years from now, your children and your children's children will be proud Maccians, as formidable as their ancestors. Love, sometimes, means sacrifice, and I feel that truly on this day. I sacrifice you to honour, to your heritage, and to a future only you can create. Go with God, my darling sons. May your dreams be realised, and may he always protect you. Anne Summers Maccian, Scotland, June 1746. Chapter 1. Glasgow, Scotland, May 1863. Rose thanked the driver as she exited the carriage and made her way down the path to the door. She didn't know what she expected, but the three-story structure with its curved front surprised her. The bay windows, one on each side of the house, were curved as well. She had the thought that it was a friendly place, that the windows were almost like eyes. The two columns on either side of the front steps created an open mouth, almost as if the house were saying, "Who are you, a stranger? Welcome anyway." What if he refused to see her? What if he sent her away? That couldn't happen. She couldn't allow it to happen. She'd come so far. Scotland surprised her, almost as much as its people. Everyone from the porter to her fellow travellers on the train had been a delight, genial and exceedingly helpful. While it was true they were curious, almost intrusively so, she didn't mind repeating that yes, she was an American. Yes, the war was a terrible thing. Thankfully, most of the discussions of her country ended there. She didn't have to explain where she came from, what she truly thought about the war, and why she wore mourning. Because she was unaccompanied, no doubt most assumed she was a widow. Assumptions were wonderful things. They kept her from lying. Rose had expected a country filled with unique vistas, tall, craggy mountains, and heather-bedecked glens. She saw those and more, heart-stopping bridges that arched over gorges and rivers crashing over rocks to settle in placid pools. Sections of Scotland were green and verdant, other places were brown, grey, and black. When they arrived in Glasgow, her opinion of Scotland underwent a transformation. Here was a place as bustling as New York. Cranes and spires filled the horizon. The sound of hammering and shouting obscured the call of the seabirds overhead. Docks and ships, long buildings and bustling people, wagons and carriages, all gave the appearance of frenetic activity. She had no idea Glasgow was so large, so hilly, or so crowded. After carefully consulting the letter in her reticule, she gave the hired driver the address to the Maccian house. How odd that after all these weeks, all she felt was an incredible urge to sleep. The voyage from Nassau to England had been relatively swift and a great deal less stressful than running the blockade from Charleston outward to the Bahamas. The train from London had been a marvel of speed and efficiency. Had she been on a different errand, she would have enjoyed herself immensely. As it was, each day sounded like a gong in the back of her mind, a deep-throated noise to alert her to how long she'd been gone. Time was not on her side. She had debated finding lodgings before calling on the Maccians, but the carriage driver said he might be able to help her in that regard, so she needn't worry. The only thing that concerned her was her dwindling resources. He must agree. He simply must. If he didn't, she was faced with having expended the funds on the voyage with no results to show for it. Even worse, she would have wasted the time it took to come to Scotland. No, that wasn't the way to think about the situation. Surely Mr. Maccian